This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. You have no doubt heard Northwestern University has been in the news of late. The private institution on Lake Michigan is known for its excellent law school, leading medical work, and renowned journalism program. And now it's also known for tolerating years of sexualized hazing among members of its football team.
On Friday, Northwestern releasing findings from an independent investigation stemming from an anonymous player's complaint late last November. The investigation found the whistleblower's claims were largely supported by the evidence.
The Daily Northwestern spoke to a former player who described several sexualized acts in an article published today.
Northwestern suspended Pat Fitzgerald 2 weeks without pay.
Pat Fitzgerald's two-week suspension turned into less than 2 weeks' notice as Northwestern fired its head football coach Monday night in the wake of a team hazing scandal.
Now a group of at least eight former Northwestern players have retained Ben Crump and a firm here in town to represent them in a possible lawsuit.
All right, hazing, the act of humiliating or harming someone for the sake of an initiation, it's a concept as old as higher education, with which it's often associated. And this Northwestern incident is the latest episode in this story, but the practice goes back at least as far as ancient Greece. Plato criticized the students at his academy for committing violent acts among classmates. And from then on, hazing never really went away. There's an early documented case of hazing as we know it today occurring at Harvard University in 1684. Back then, someone was expelled for hitting students and having them perform acts of servitude. And unfortunately, the scandal at Northwestern is not the first of its kind in Illinois, and it will likely not be the last. So today on the program, we're pulling back to look at the big picture of hazing, the dangers associated with it, and what we can do about it. Joining us for this conversation is Leanne Kowiak, a hazing prevention advocate. She's on the board of directors for the Hazing Prevention Network and is a founding member of the Anti-Hazing Coalition. Leanne, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you so much for having me and for having this conversation today.
Also joining us is Byron Hurt, the filmmaker, director, and narrator of Hazing, a documentary that explores what's behind these rituals and their consequences. If you support your local PBS station, you can view Hazing right now through the PBS Passport app. Byron, welcome to the 21st Show to you as well.
Thank you very much for having me.
And listeners, I know this can be a challenging conversation topic. People who experience hazing often do not like to talk about it. It's part of the code that you're not supposed to talk about it. But if you are willing to share your story today, we want to hear from you at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Byron, I want to begin with you. Can you just, beyond what I said in the introduction there, define hazing for us?
Well, you stated it. Hazing is any activity expected of someone joining or participating in a group that humiliates, degrades, abuses, or endangers them, regardless of a person's willingness to participate. And this can be in any space, organization, institution, or team where you are either a member or you are seeking membership to an organization or a team. That's the definition that is generally used by Stop Hazing, which is an organization that I'm currently partnering with to create a discussion guide to accompany my film, Hazing. They've done a tremendous amount of research on this issue, and I've learned a lot from the research that they have done, in which they have spoken to several people across various spaces, including sports culture, who share their stories about the hazing that they experienced.
You know, hazing is typically associated with colleges, whether it be in fraternities or sororities or sports organizations, but it shows up in other parts of American life, as your film shows. Can you talk about where else hazing occurs?
Well, I mean, one big space where hazing occurs is sport. Sports culture is a really big place where hazing happens often. So it's not surprising what the former athlete revealed about his experience many years ago, and that others have corroborated with their experiences. There have been documented cases of hazing in performing arts organizations like marching bands, academic clubs, Of course, fraternities and sororities, the police academy, in other areas of academia. I mean, some people have said that they experienced, you know, the kind of hazing that we are familiar with in Greek life, but in academic spaces, like, you know, earning their PhD, for example, in terms of the emotional and maybe even sometimes verbal abuse that they have to withstand during that process. There's been a documented case of hazing that has happened in firehouses among firemen, in security departments. I know that there was a case at Newark Airport, Newark International Airport, with a hazing ritual among rookie security officers at Newark International Airport. So it happens in a lot of different spaces. Most of the attention is focused on college students, but that's not the only space where it occurs.
Leanne, I want to bring you into the conversation now. And I'm sure this is still difficult after all these years, but can you just begin by telling us about your son, Harrison? Who was he in life?
Thank you for asking, Brian. So my beautiful son, Harrison Kowiak, was full of life. He just lit up the room when he walked into the room, had an infectious smile, and certainly a generous heart. Harrison took to the sport of golf when he was in high school. We live in Tampa, Florida, and he just found that it was very rewarding to him. He wanted to pursue it in high school. He eventually became captain of the boys' golf team in high school, and he decided that he wanted to pursue it in college.
And he goes to college, and he decides to pledge a fraternity. Was he excited about that?
Yeah, Brian, you know, we were so proud of Harrison. He attended Lenoir Rhine University, which is in Hickory, North Carolina. It's approximately 40 minutes from Charlotte. And he was attending on an athletic as well as an academic scholarship. He was so excited. He had never been away from home. And he has a younger sister, who's Emma, who's about 9 years younger. And they were just so, so close. Harrison was the ultimate big brother to his younger sister. And he knew during his freshman year, Brian, that he had to focus on his academics as well as practice his golf skills so that he can play in the tournaments to keep those scholarships. He did not want to do anything to jeopardize that. So freshman year, he did nothing regarding any type of extracurricular activities beyond the sports. It was the summer between his freshman and his sophomore year. He came home for the summer. We're a very close-knit family, and we talked about quite a bit of different topics, and he brought it up to us, to my husband and myself. He said, "Mom, Dad, I'm thinking about pursuing Theta Chi. It's a fraternity." And quite honestly, we didn't know a whole lot about fraternities and sororities. And I asked him why, and I'm sure for many of the reasons that individuals join a fraternity or sorority. In Harrison's situation, he wanted that full college experience. He just felt that it would be a great way to network, to make friends. And again, it wasn't something that he pursued until his sophomore year.
And so what happens as he is pledging the Theta Chi fraternity?
Yeah, so Brian, it was parents' weekend. The freshman year, all three of us, my husband, Harrison's sister, and I went up. But his sophomore year, our daughter had a volleyball tournament, so my husband stayed back with her, and I went up to North Carolina to spend that family weekend with Harrison. And we had a wonderful time. Being from Florida, we were not too familiar, frankly, with North Carolina. We had the rental car. We went to explore. We had some nice meals out for dinner and just wonderful time bonding with mother and son time there. What had happened is Harrison had mentioned to me he had only a few weeks left to go in this process to be a full brother of Theta Chi. And I asked Harrison the question. And the question was, "Harrison, is it safe?" And he looked at me, he says, "Mom, don't worry, it's safe. The guys on the golf team have my back," because many of those guys on the golf team were in Theta Chi. And they felt that Harrison could carry on the legacy of the golf team being in Theta Chi and potentially being perhaps chapter president of this chapter of Theta Chi at Lenoir Rhyne University. It was that horrific phone call that no parent should ever expect to receive. Frankly, no parent should ever have to send their child off to college and not have them come home. And that was the worst phone call of our life. It was in November of 2008. Mm. It was around 10 p.m. and it was Harrison's big brother. I had met him a couple of times and he said, "Mrs. Kowiak, I'm so sorry to call so late. We're at the local hospital." And I asked him what happened. He said, "We were playing intramural football off campus, well, actually on campus, and Harrison tried to catch the football and landed down hard and hurt himself." The story had evolved. Eventually, we had learned that Harrison and the other pledge were taken about 20 miles off campus to a dark field, and they were told to wear light-colored clothing, and the brothers of the chapter were wearing dark-colored clothing. Some of them were standing on the side of the field just with their arms crossed and with the headlights of their car on. Those were the bystanders. And Harrison and the other pledge were told to wear light-colored clothing so that they would stand out, and was told to run across the field to touch the sacred rock. However, unbeknownst to Harrison and the other pledge, they would be tackled from the left, from the right, from the rear. Frankly, that element of surprise when you just don't expect it, number one, that is dangerous. But secondly, Harrison was a golfer. He never played tackle sports. Some of these guys that tackled Harrison were football players at Lenoir Rhyne, 220 pounds plus. And I will share with you that Harrison was only about 165 pounds or so. And he had hit his head one too many times. He didn't get up. They thought he was fooling around. They said, "Kowiak, Kowiak, get up." When he didn't respond, they lifted him and put him in the back seat of the car and drove him to the regional hospital. If there's anything I want your audience to take away is, God forbid there's an emergency, don't waste precious minutes. Call 911. Your actions could save a life.
Leanne, I'm so sorry for your loss, and thank you so much for sharing that story with us today. Byron, what's going through your mind? I know you heard a lot of stories of, excuse me, sons and daughters and brothers and sisters and mothers who experience this sort of thing as well.
Well, first, I'm just so deeply sorry to hear Leanne's story and the story of Harrison. It's a familiar story that I've heard many similar stories like it over the last 10 years of working on my documentary. But they all share very similar characteristics. And that is this idea that hazing acts or hazing activities are harmless pranks. They're for fun, or they're just another way for one to prove themselves or to prove that they are a credible, valued member of a group. And that this is not the way that it ends up for many people. And it's just a very unfortunate and tragic story. And it's what can happen when a culture of hazing exists within any organization or any team or institution. And so I just hate the fact that, you know, this story, Harrison's story, is very, very similar to the kind of stories that I've heard over and over and over again while working on my documentary, Hazing.
Let's listen to another clip from the documentary. This is a woman named Nikki High talking about coping with the death of her sister, Kristen High, in another Hazing episode.
I just have to be honest. I hated people who were in sororities. And I had to go to grief therapy. I was depressed. I was sad. For years, I dreamed that Kristen was trying to struggle to get off the water for me and Mama and Skylar for years. And I asked God to just give me the purpose of Kristen's death, because I don't understand. But to me, her purpose was for this, for people to know that hazing is not right.
Leanne, I wonder, you know, if that resonates with you. as you hear that clip?
Oh, absolutely. You know, certainly as a mom, as my husband and I continue to grieve for the loss of our son, Harrison. Look, he would be 34 years old now, and we want what every parent wants for their child, to live a full, happy, safe, productive life. You know, I certainly cannot help but think, would Harrison have been married now, perhaps have children? What would his career have been? Where would he have taken it, et cetera? And I will tell you, it not only impacts the parents, but certainly the siblings. You know, Emma is 25 years old now. She is pursuing a position in the healthcare field as a nurse practitioner. Frankly, I have no doubt in my mind that this is the profession Emma is choosing because of our personal tragedy in the family. But think about, you know, the family, the aunts, the uncles, the grandparents, the friends. What if there was a girlfriend or boyfriend involved? The Mother's Day, Father's Day, holidays, birthdays, those are all triggers, frankly, for me. You know, when November 18th rolls around, my gut, my stomach just drops. Harrison's birthday is in January, January 5th. And that also is a date that triggers in my head.
Yeah.
So the impact for everyone is huge. Even the perpetrators, the criminals, you know, what have they done with their life now? If they are charged with hazing and they have a felony on their record, they've just thrown their life around. What about the thousands and thousands of dollars that the families have spent if there are court hearings, yeah, et cetera?
All right, we're going to continue this conversation when we take a short break. This is the 21st show. We're talking about hazing. If you want to join us today, we'd love to hear your story as well. The number to call is 800-222-9455. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st show. Do please stay with us. This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about hazing, of course, related to the Northwestern University scandal that's come to light in the past few weeks. The football coach fired there. The baseball coach has been suspended. But this is thought to be something that is much more widespread than these occasional news stories led on. We're talking about this with Leanne Kowiak, who is a hazing prevention advocate. Her own, her son, Harrison, was killed in a hazing episode while pledging a college fraternity a number of years ago. We're also speaking with Byron Hurt, who is a filmmaker, director, and the narrator, one of the main characters in the documentary Hazing that was shown on PBS. You can still see it on the PBS Passport app. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation today. Byron, I must say, the film, you know, beyond the stories, which are of course heartbreaking, it's really well done just as a film, visually, sound design, and you share your own personal experience, both as somebody who experienced hazing in pledging your college fraternity and then as a perpetrator. Can you talk about your own experience with this?
Well, I should say that I've experienced hazing at different levels of my life. I experienced hazing as a high school student, and then as a college student, as a victim of hazing. And then, like many people who experience hazing, I internalized my experience and sort of used my privilege as a member of the organization to perpetuate hazing because I felt like it was just a part of the process, that it was a part of the tradition, and that, you know, I had to put people through what I went through in order for them to be seen as credible members of the group. And so I talk about that in the film, but the reason why I talk about it in the film is because I and others believe that one of the main factors that helps to fuel the tradition or the practice of hazing is silence. And the fact that people don't want to talk about their hazing experiences openly and publicly in fear of retaliation or in fear that they will be seen as weak or a less than worthy member of that group, organization, or team. And so I decided that it was very important for me to share my personal story to model transparency and openness so that others may follow suit and talk about their own experiences, and to give permission to young people who are currently going through these experiences to speak out against them. I thought that it was very important for me to do that. And I also thought it was intellectually honest for me to share what happened with me while focusing on the stories of others. So that's the reason why I included my story in the film. And so far that has really proven to be true. I mean, many people have opened up and have reached out to me and have talked openly about their experiences. Many people have reached out to me privately to share their experiences and to talk about their own views, their disagreement with hazing culture, which I think has to happen more. One of the reasons why hazing continues is that people who disagree with hazing still participate in it because they want to be seen as a valued member of the group, or they feel like their silence, I would say that their silence is a form of complicity, and that also helps to fuel the culture of hazing. So the more people that speak out publicly like myself, the more that people like Leanne share their stories about their sons and daughters, hopefully we'll be able to change this culture.
All right, let's go to the phones now on that very note. We have somebody calling in, doesn't want to use his name for reasons that I think we can understand based on what we've been talking about. On line four, thank you for calling in. What was your experience of hazing?
I ran cross country in high school, and there were junior members of the cross country team who were involved in hazing activities for the sophomores, and it wasn't, you know, really terrible stuff. On one occasion, it did become sexual. But the reason I called is because the coach that was of that team at the time, he became a Hall of Fame coach in the state where I live. I moved to another high school the next year to try to avoid this kind of stuff. And there was something similar going on at that school. I wasn't hazed as a junior, but the other reason I called is that I think this is generational. I think players learn it from assistant coaches and peripheral members of the group. The two of the athletes that were involved with me became college NCAA coaches.
Wow. Thank you so much for calling in and sharing that. Leanne, can you talk about that aspect, as you've done work on this, of the people in power in these situations and the fact that they often know about it or sort of tacitly approve or maybe don't ask the right questions?
Yeah, so in my experience, I really have to emphasize that not only parents, but certainly alumni and bystanders, individuals that have been involved in these organizations, they may see something, they may hear something. But look, you can't just sweep it under the rug. Quite frankly, in the situation with Northwestern, from what I know about just by reading about it, I applaud individuals such as Byron, but individuals on the Northwestern football team, these individuals who used to be on the team or currently, and they're starting to speak out about their experience. Those are the true heroes in my mind who are able to stand up and speak out about their experience. Look, there's nothing that's going to bring back Harrison and all these other young men and women who have sadly lost their lives to senseless hazing. But if we can make more and more individuals aware of what's going on, that needs to take place. And hopefully we can prevent another loss of life or another family from suffering. But it really is up to the leaders in the organizations who need to keep a pulse on what is happening underneath their jurisdiction. The fact that they may say, I didn't know about it. You know what? It's your obligation, your responsibility to know everything that is under your responsibility.
Byron, you talked in making the movie about your own fears about how your fellow fraternity members would react to what you were saying publicly, because these things are just not supposed to be talked about. What reaction have you received?
I'd like to say that what Leanne just said is 100% right. It is really important for people to speak out and to be proactive. And it does require a tremendous amount of courage for any individual to speak out against hazing culture, especially if they are a current member of that team, group, or organization. It's really, really hard. And it does require a certain level of courage, ethics, a certain set of values. But really, it requires a tremendous amount of courage, because you have to withstand the feedback and the responses by those who want to maintain the status quo. They want to keep the social order or the social hierarchy in place. And so for me, there was a negative reaction to my releasing this documentary film. And there was a lot of name calling. There were a lot of attacks hurled in my direction because I decided to talk openly about my experience and talk about it within the context of the larger culture of hazing. However, and this is really important, there are a lot of people who reached out to me in support of me making the film, those who were members of my organization and those who had experienced hazing wherever they experienced it. And so again, the film gave people permission to speak about it publicly. And that has been the challenge, because this is an issue that for a long time has been seen as a private issue, a secret matter, something that is supposed to be swept under the rug, something that's supposed to be kept from authorities and leaders of institutions and teams and organizations. And so that's how it is able to sustain itself. And also, remember, when we're talking about sport, when we're talking about a football team, one of the main characteristics of being an athlete is that you have to be tough, or that you have to play through pain, or you have to be an accepted, loyal member of the team who's committed to that team. And so speaking out against your teammates and putting your team in jeopardy, putting your coach in jeopardy, means by definition that you are not a good team member. And that mentality, that the way in which we talk about being an athlete, has to change. Because the more that we talk about, we associate things with like toughness and manhood and, you know, leaving it all on the floor for the team and being loyal to the team, as long as we continue to use that language without having any flexibility for showing pain, hurt, disrespect, humiliation, shame, we make it harder and harder for people to use their voice to speak out.
Leanne, we're coming to the end of our time together today. We've certainly seen, I mean, I think hazing, I learned this from the documentary, hazing is illegal in the vast majority of states. Universities, many universities have zero tolerance policies, even fraternities and sororities supposedly have zero tolerance or no hazing policies, at least. What is it really going to take, though, for the change here? Are we just really relying on the good judgment of people who have been part of the system for generations?
Yeah, so what it's going to take, frankly, are tougher laws to deter individuals from hazing. I will share with you, in Harrison's case in 2008 in North Carolina, the individuals that did the hazing, they just basically got a slap on the hand. They are living their lives. You know, I don't know what they're doing now, but I don't have my son anymore. We have a huge gap in our lives. And you know, again, these laws just have to be strengthened. Now, I will share with you, like in the states of, let's say, Pennsylvania, Louisiana, where there have been prominent hazing deaths that were in the news, there are stronger laws that are in effect where it is a felony. And so with the Anti-Hazing Coalition that was founded by parents, but also by individuals that are in fraternities and sororities, different organizations such as Hazing Prevention Network, et cetera, we are working together. This is not about pointing fingers. We have to collectively work together so that we can stand up to hazing. And so we have gone to Washington, D.C. We have lobbied on the Hill, and we are trying to have stronger laws that, frankly, I think it's going to pass in the fall. So stay tuned for that in the headlines, because there are many of us that are working to try to make it a felony. This hazing has got to stop.
Leanne Kowiak, thank you so much for being with us and sharing your story of your son, Harrison, with us. You're honoring his memory with your work. I very much appreciate you being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you for having me.
And Byron Hurt is the filmmaker and director behind the documentary Hazing. You can watch it now on the PBS Passport app. Byron, thank you as well for being with us and for doing this work.
You're welcome. And it was great to meet Leanne. And I'm just so in support of everything that she is doing to advocate for her son and other victims of hazing and survivors. Thank you.
Thank you. That's all the time we have for our program today. We do love hearing what you think about what we've been talking about on the show. Whether you liked it or didn't like it, if you think we got something wrong, for whatever reason, let us know. You can leave a voicemail anytime, day or night. 217-300-2121 is the number. 217-300-2121. You can also email us. talk@21stshow.org is the address. And you can find all that information, every way to contact us on our website, 21stshow.org. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield, Kennedy Vincent, and Jose Zepeda. Our intern is Nick Boyven. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.